Welcome, everyone, joining us here tonight on the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Question and Answer Net. I'm Roy, AC2GS, and I will be your net control operator for this informal net. I will be your host, and Bob, KD2NVB, will be my co-host on this exploration into amateur radio technology. The purpose of this net is to provide a platform for discussion and to offer our answers, as well as promote a conversation among all participants of this net. The club maintains an archive of these technical nets on its web pages, and we also offer original articles and reviews on many of the topics that are covered during these technical nets. We also publish a technical puzzle for our participants to ponder and as a starting off point to discuss their important technical concepts. Tonight's TechNet puzzle is posted on our club's website. The link can be found on the front page of our website in orange color type, but if you would like a simple URL to find it, just type into your browser puzzle.kc2rc.com. Also, we will be offering a streaming service for those who cannot receive our repeater signal. Just point your browser to stream.kc2rc.com, and we also have an EchoLink node available. Just point your EchoLink application to the node kc2rc-r. This net is scheduled for the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month, and all of this information can also be found on our club's website, which is www.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. And as always, an application is readily available on our website. No question is too simple. No question is dumb. All wisdom begins with the asking of questions. If you have a question, it deserves to be answered. Our format tonight will be to ask for participants to check in only if they have questions or comments for this technical net. Please give us your first name, your call sign, whether you have a question or a comment. The net will then address each question in order. I will try to provide a cogent answer, and Bob, KD2NVB, will join in as well. If any other listener has any further facts or opinions to share, they will be free to break in with a word comment, and when recognized, offer their knowledge or experiences to us all. If anyone has any suggestions for any future topics of interest, please let us know either here on the technical net, or you can use our email address, which is tech@kc2rc.com. And now I would like to introduce my co-host for this net, Bob, KD2NVB. Good evening, Bob.
Roy, good to be back. It's been a little while. Looking forward to a good net tonight. To some people out there. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good. Glad to have you back as well, Bob. So we begin. If you have any questions or comments for tonight, just hit that push to talk. Give me your first name, your call sign, whether it's a question or a comment, and we'll put you down on the list. Well, once again, we kind of start a little bit on the slow side. I'll wait for some of you guys out there to warm up and start thinking of questions. I'll give you a short little relay a little experience I had recently, and it's not really amateur radio, but it's electronics and computers and things like that. I have a reasonably nice Dell color laser printer. I've been using it for must be 4 or 5 years now. I don't use it a lot, but you know, when I need it, it works for me. A couple weeks ago, I turned it. I tried to print something, and it didn't recognize it. It was in sleep mode, so sometimes it does that. I'll just shut the power and turn the power up. When I did that, instead of it kind of rebooting as usual, it came up with an error screen that there's some kind of booting error, and it suggests two things. I can try turning the power off and on again, which is kind of the response to most people when you ask them for help with their with your computer. Or I could contact my administrator. Since I am my administrator, that would be a rather pointless endeavor. So I cycled the printer on and off. Didn't really help. I unplugged it and let it sleep for the night and plugged it in and turned it on. Didn't help. Just cycling it didn't really help. I opened it up. I looked around. There was no paper jam. There was no visible problem that I could perceive. So I just set it aside and went on to other things with the idea that I would just keep on attacking it. Ultimately, I was able to get an error message. The error message said something about a non-volatile memory board had a timing error, and it was a non-serviceable problem, and that I should contact a service technician. So I'd moved up from having to contact my administrator to having to contact a non-existent service technician. But he gave me an idea, and it mentioned non-volatile memory. Someplace in the guts of Google, I had found a page that discussed how to reset your non-volatile memory, going through a backdoor service menu that was hidden to most people. And so I looked up that page, and it required me to kind of press what was called a home button when it booted up, which is something I usually don't do. I press the on button. So, but nevertheless, I hit the home button, and I got the same error comment. So I went back to my computer and started to Google again. In about 5-10 minutes, I'm getting up and I'm walking past the printer, and I see that the printer's screen has changed from the warning to a number field and an array of 10 digits that look like it could be kind of a virtual touchpad push button. And I knew the magic code to get into the service menu. It was 2345. So I tried 2345, and surprise, I got into the service menu, and then I had to go through some very obscure requests to get into a sub menu, and I finally got to the point where I was able to reset the non-volatile memory module. And when I got out of the service menu, it rebooted and it started to work. So when in doubt, unless you have a administrator or you have a service technician, Google everything that you possibly can and search feverishly for a diagnostic or a service menu that is hidden in a lot of electrical equipment. You know, with all that CPU power and all that memory, programmers hide the strangest things. So something to keep in mind the next time some computer-related piece of equipment is misbehaving and you can't find a mechanical reason why it's doing that. It's probably screwed up some little bit flag in its firmware. Anyway, that's my story. That's what I did last week. So hopefully that gives everyone a little time to warm up their radios and get ready to ask their own questions or make their own comment. So please, this is AC2GS with the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. Bring it on. Okay, nothing much still heard. Interesting, we have a few people on Echolink. One is W1JEC, and he wrote a little text message. He says, not transmitting with my spacebar. Well, I mean, it should operate with the space bar, but worst comes to worst, you can simply point your browser at that little lightning bolt symbol at the far left side of your taskbar at the top of your Echo Link, and that's kind of the ultimate push-to-talk button. So you might want to try that instead of the space bar. Also doesn't react. Well, I don't know what to tell you. Maybe some setting is incorrect. Maybe you could try shutting it off and turning it back on again, like I was mentioning with the printer. Make sure it also depends on how you have it set up. Some require proxies to operate. I would assume since that's your only Echo Link on your primary computer, you didn't need to go on a separate proxy. Another problem sometimes is if you have never used Echo Link before, I don't know if you have. I'm going to log out and back in. Okay, he's going to log in and go back on. Sometimes, unfortunately, you have to do some port forwarding on your routers. Sometimes the routers are smart enough to recognize Echo Link ports and let you through. Sometimes they only give it to you one way. So it's possible that he needs to play with the port forwarding. He's off Echo Link right now, and he's going to give it another try. Anyway, once again, I continue to be AC2GS. This continues to be the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. So if anyone has any comments or questions tonight, please hit that push to talk.
KD2NVP, I have a little question. It's not radio, but it's electrical stuff question. If no one else is there, I could ask you.
Sure, let her rip.
Yeah, I think I know what it might be, but I have one of these Bose, like, fancy kind of clock radio that has a CD player in it, and I got a little, actually, I found it on the sidewalk, believe it or not, several years ago. Someone left it on the sidewalk, so if you to buy one, it would be about $400. So anyway, I ordered a remote for it. Now, I've had this for years now, but it's getting worse and worse, but it's like some buttons work and some don't, so I assume it's just some silly thing, like the connectors are just not connecting very well, and if I could pop it open, figure some way to unglue it and pop it open, I might be able to, like, bend something and fix certain buttons. Like, it's hard to turn on and off, but the volume control is perfect, works fine, so it must be something like that, so I just thought I'd bounce that off of you.
Okay, well, that's a reasonably good question. My guess, and I could be wrong, is that it probably uses something called a membrane switch or an actual mat of membrane switches. And if you were able to pop the top off of it, what you would see was usually kind of black rubber that has fine carbon powder spread out on the underside, and it goes in contact with a PC board with a series of conductor tracings right below the membrane button. And when you push the button so that the kind of bubble inverts onto the PCB board, it shorts out the little contacts, and that's the way the switch works. The problem is that these things don't have an eternal lifespan, and so they can get kind of dirty, kind of gummy, and when you apply the usual pressure, it doesn't seem to work. So, unfortunately, you can't really do it without popping the case. So, you know, get yourself something hard and sharp, and see if you can kind of slip if it's glued together. Sometimes it's screwed in. Sometimes there are clips that are hidden inside it. But there are lots of tools to kind of pry those things apart, and then take a look at the rubber mat. Try and clean it. Try and clean the PC board contacts. And sometimes that's all you need. You kind of put it all together. Don't glue it yet and try it. And sometimes it comes back. Sometimes you have to kind of get some more carbon powder and apply it on the underside of the rubber mat. But usually cleaning the contacts and just lightly brushing the inner aspect of the rubber part of the switch. Now, if you don't have a membrane switch, it's possible that you have mechanical switches. They're rather more expensive. Most companies don't pay extra money, so it's unlikely. But same kind of goes, except you're better off with a little canned ear. Or if you want to try that antioxidant spray that we mentioned a few times in past technical nets, that would be the approach for mechanical switches. For membrane switches, it's just kind of clean the contacts with something simple. You could use isopropyl alcohol for the PC board. I wouldn't use isopropyl alcohol for the rubber because you want to kind of keep that carbon powder that's conductive on the surface there. Just kind of see if there's any kind of schmutz and just wipe it off. And worst comes to worst, you know, you can get some powdered graphite and reapply a fine layer.
So it sounds like you said, so probably don't use isopropyl alcohol on the membrane. It would just, whatever, dissolve the stuff or mess it up. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't suggest that because I don't know what kind of rubber it's made of. It could get degraded by the isopropyl alcohol. It certainly is going to wash away the carbon powder, which is important for the operation of the switch. So for the most part, usually, if you can apply the isopropyl on the PC board and let it dry, that should be sufficient. There's usually enough carbon powder on the membrane to kind of get over the hump. But what usually happens is some kind of film develops on the contacts on the the PC board. But I mean, worst comes to worst, like I said, it's incredibly inexpensive to get carbon powder and kind of mist the backside of your mat if you need to. If you can get away without it, you're best to get away without it. But that's another option. Yeah, I've had that problem with membrane switches on remotes many times, and that usually helps.
Thanks, Roy. Yeah, the trickiest part might be, you know, taking it apart without, you know, mashing it up, you know, just getting the glue. And I guess that, do you have any tips for that? I mean, I was just thinking the standard, I mean, the intuitive things like just some very thin screwdriver blade or something and see if I can do it that way without breaking something, just get the glue off. Or do you have any other suggestions for that? Sounds like you've done it before. Back to you.
Yeah, I got two recommendations. If you have something that produces hot air, we could make a joke about that, but I'll spare everyone. You know, a hair dryer, a heat gun, whatever, because the glue will hopefully soften up. You don't want to melt the plastic, but you know, apply a little hot air to where the two halves come together. That hopefully will soften the glue a little bit. And then you know, you could go through Amazon. I forget what they call them, sponges or something. They're little pry bars. They're very nice. Sometimes they come in a set. They range from stainless thin, very thin stainless steel to plastic. If you're, you know, if you're concerned about marring the plastic finish of the device you're trying to separate, usually you try the plastic wedges first, and then you graduate to the stainless steel blade. That's been very effective. People use that to open up Apple products all the time, and they're filled with glue.
Yeah, I think I might have something like that, because long ago when you could still do that, well, actually my old Mac, you can do that, when you could actually replace and upgrade your hard drive in your laptop, I think I got a kit for that. Might be some of the same stuff. So I guess, yeah, the hair dryer is a good idea. I have a hair dryer. I've used it for defrosting my supposed but not really self-defrosting refrigerator. Yeah, I got a good hair dryer. I never use it for drying hair. And putting it back together, what's your, do you just use some kind of glue, or what would you say about that?
Well, basically, it's based upon how it got put together the first time. I assume there's no screws, so there still could be clips. So if there are clips, then it's an easy fix. You just apply a little pressure, and the clips will re-engage as long as you didn't snap them off. If you snap them off, or if there is no internal clips, you put a little bit of glue of your choice, a fine line of epoxy, and that should suffice. You know, plastic, there's a whole bunch of different glues that work for plastic to plastic. I tend to like epoxy because it sets really fast as long as you don't buy the slow setting stuff. And but you know, you could use other things, but I tend to like epoxy. I wouldn't use crazy glue. Crazy glue is great when you have a good amount of surface area, which you won't under this circumstances. But epoxy is probably, you know, I mean, plastic glue, that's fine too, but I would probably go with epoxy.
Thanks, Roy. Yeah, I'll try that. You know, I would just buy a new one, though it was like $20 or something, but it was a couple years ago I checked. And now Amazon said, no longer available, and yeah. So, but it'd be an interesting challenge to try to fix it first anyway. So, thanks, Roy. I'll give it a go.
Okay, very good. I wish you luck on that. Like I said, I have had to do it to more than a few remote controls. They're kind of inherently built inexpensively, shall we say, you know, especially when the number of buttons increases. Because, you know, the difference probably between a contact switch, you know, one of those rubber contact switches versus a mechanical switch isn't that much if it's just one switch. But with remote controls especially, some of them could be 20 and 30 and 40, and it becomes ridiculously cheaper to use those rubber mat technology switches. So I wish you luck on that, Bob, and, you know, let us know some future technical net how it all turned out.
Will do. I may even have it may bring up more questions too. So very good. Thanks, Roy. I hope there's somebody out there with another question.
Yeah, that would be very nice. I'm AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the King Saudi Radio Club Technical Net. We're open for business, so if anyone has any questions or comments, W1JEC is back on the Echo Link, so I hope he's able to transmit this time. We'll see.
This is AC2ZV. Hi, Roy. Just checking in.
Okay, William recognized W1JEC. I hear you. Your audio is kind of on the weak side, so if you could get closer to your microphone, maybe that would help. Otherwise, if you could bring up the gain to the microphone. I try to remind people on Echolink that there's this station called Echo Test. So it's a very nice tool to use just to make sure that the audio settings are good. You go, instead of joining, say, us, KC2RC-R, you join Echo Test, and all it does is repeat your audio back at you. So you transmit to Echo Test, and it replays it, and if the volume is low, you hear the low volume, and you tweak the settings. So everyone who uses Echolink should get familiar with the Echo Test node, just to make sure that the audio levels are best for their case. So W1JEC, I hear you. You got any questions or comments?
MVP with a quick comment.
Yes, Bob. Yes, Bob, you wanted to say something?
MVP, I guess you're talking to me. Yeah, when you said his signal was weak, on my end it was the opposite. It was very loud. It was much louder than your signal.
Okay, that's curious. Well, it kind of fluctuated. There were small portions that were good amplitude, and then it kind of faded away, and then it came back, so it was kind of all over the place.
Everything I heard was loud. I grabbed the volume control and turned it down a bit.
Okay, well, I don't know what to tell you. Maybe it was a connection at my end. I run a lot of mixers and all kinds of strange things. A couple of weeks ago, I kind of used part of this audio chain to do my Limark technical net, and for some strange reason, my computer seems to have bonded my headphones that I use for both purposes with KC2RC's audio digital output. So no matter what I did, I kept on hearing the emergency service net that was going on at the same time that I was trying to do the technical net, which wasn't that bad because that net lasts about 30 seconds. So it just left me a little bit confused, and I finally found a way to negate that connection. Well, the signal. I haven't found out how it kind of bonded to each other. I emailed the company Elgato, and they still haven't gotten back to me, so I guess I'll just have to turn that bonded connection off. But who knows? I mean, you wouldn't believe the complicated nature of the way I have things configured. It's very easy for me to set up this so that Echolink pours into the repeater and the repeater pours into Echolink. It's injecting me into the equation that kind of triples the complications necessary.
One question. Was that... I didn't catch the call sign. I thought for a minute it was William. I guess it wasn't. Was it the guy on Echolink or somebody on Echolink, or it sounded to me like a regular radio signal. Back to you.
Well, you know, I mean, it was a radio signal from my shack. It was W1JEC who's been trying to establish an Echolink. The first time, he couldn't get the transmit function to work. You know, he clicked on the lightning bolt. He used the space bar, but it wouldn't do any transmissions. So he shut it down and started it up again, and it worked, except that the audio was a little funky. And for whatever reason, he's logged off our Echolink node right now. I don't know if he's going to try and fix something or if he just gave up on us for the night.
KC2ZV.
I was arguing about whether the signal was loud or soft. I don't know. Maybe he'll come back. I guess because it was strong and usually Echolink signals are softer, maybe that's why I thought it was, you know, not an Echolink signal. Back to you, Roy.
AC2ZV checking in.
Yes, William. William recognized. I just want to respond to Bob. I'm trying something different to boost the signal with Echo Link in the radio. So William's audio should sound a bit stronger to you now than usually when he goes through Echo Link. Assuming he's going through Echo Link. I didn't notice. I think he was.
Okay. This is AC2ZV. I'm coming at you through the radio at this point. I didn't hear that other gentleman out there, but he sent some messages and he's rebooting and he's going to try to get back, it looks like.
Acceptably at a nice level. I'm back to you.
Okay, unfortunately, William and Bob doubled. So I heard William with a weird kind of background because of the doubling. And Bob, I guess in the competition, the FM carrier locked on to William. So if you want to repeat yourself, because I only heard the last few words of your message.
NVP here. I was just saying, William's signal also sounded strong. It was probably about like the same as the other one, but it's okay. I mean, it's louder than your signal, but I got my volume in a place where both are fine. I don't have to be moving the knob around, so it's all fine. It's a strong signal, which is fine.
Okay, very good. I boosted the mic output. Is that any better for you?
Oh yeah, I liked it the way you were before too. You sound a little, well, it's fine now, too, but it sounded maybe slightly pushing the edge of, I don't know, not distortion, but maybe just before that.
Okay, I cut the difference. It's somewhere in the middle. I find that going into this setup for KC2RC, a little hotter usually is better, and a little bit less so for Limark. Limark, I've had complaints that if I use this sort of amplitude, it distorts a little bit at the edge. So I tend to change the settings back and forth depending on whether I'm using it for Kings County or for Limark.
It's good now. I believe it's slightly louder than you started at the beginning, and it's just as good and a little bit louder, which is maybe a little bit better.
Okay, very good. So I'll keep it here tonight for this Sunday. I'll have to set it a little bit lower, and I'll just try and remember to set it a little bit higher the next time we have our technical net. William, W1JEC is back online. You want to give it another try? Well, I don't know. Hopefully W1JEC will be able to figure out the best way to get in touch with us. Once again, I'm AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're here on the second and the fourth Wednesday of each and every month, starting at 9 p.m. We go on until people run out of things to talk about here. So if anyone has any questions or comments for tonight, please hit that push to talk. Give us your first name and your call sign.
This is Joe N2DEJ. I have a question when you get a chance.
Okay, very good, Joe. Glad to hear you. We got time right now. Please, what's your question?
I never used 10 meters till now, just this past year, and we're at a solar maximum, I'm guessing, or getting close to it. What is 10 meters like when it's a solar minimum? Would it even be possible to talk across the country like I am now? Over.
Well, you know, I mean, nothing's on binary 1 and 0. During the sunspot minimum, it was not unusual occasionally to talk to someone down the southeast coast. We would occasionally have transmissions coming in from Florida, maybe South Carolina, but those were very, very occasional. Without activating the F1, F2 ionosphere layers, you will not get the propagation that you do when there's a lot of sunspot activity. It's probably going to max out in another year. Someone made the glib comment on either this TechNet or the Limark one that you never know that you've reached your peak until you're on your way down the other side. So that's true. It'll take a little bit of time. And last cycle, we had a very unusual cycle in that it did not have a single peak. It had a bifurcated peak. It went up to a maximum, then it dipped down for a couple of months, and it went back up to another maximum, and then it went down. So we probably have something like another year to go before we get the most activity with the sunspots. And eventually, when the sunspots die away, we probably won't be able to talk to you on the 10-meter net. Usually, we end up chatting to Staten Island, the coast of New Jersey, Brooklyn, and Queens. We can't even make it across the Queens-Nassau County line.
I really had no feel for it, but so we're just gonna have to enjoy 10 meters while we can. So hopefully I can, I'm trying you on the mornings, and sometimes I got so much QRM out my end that I can't make you guys out. But that even happens on 20 meters, so out here. So all right, cool. Thanks a lot. All right, Ray, back to you. Roy, sorry. And to DEJ, standing by.
Okay, very good. Like I said, you got a few more years to enjoy 10 meters. I mean, that's the plus and the minus of 10 meters. When it's hot, it's very hot. You can talk, you know, we regularly talk to the southern end of Africa. There's a guy, Mike, I forget where he was, just above South Africa he lives. But you only get that for, you know, 4 or 5 years every 11 years. So I guess you appreciate it more under those circumstances. That's just the nature of things.
I'm talking to Europe from out here in Phoenix on 10 meters, when I'm on the radio there. So it really is amazing. It boggles the mind for me. So I'm really enjoying it. Back to you.
Yeah, it's a very enjoyable band during these times in the sunspot cycle. I think it was 2 weeks ago I talked to the United Kingdom, and then after that I talked to a gentleman in Poland. So it's very nice. Again, you don't get that during the sunspot minimum. I was thrilled endlessly. I think once or twice there was an Arizona station that must be really built up, because he's one of the few stations, even during the sunspot minimums, occasionally he would pop up. So, enjoy these transcontinental QSOs right now, because when the sunspots stop popping, everything's going to go quiet on 10 and 6 megahertz. Have you tried 6 megahertz yet? Every time I look there, it's not much is going on. But that's the original magic band where, you know, when propagation conditions are right, the whole world is open to you on 6. I don't have an antenna that works for 6, so I don't really look into it that much.
No, I haven't tried 6 yet. My antenna right now isn't, I'm just using a wire and fed half wave, and it's not cut for, I don't get 6 meters on there, but, I'm going to swap myself out with a quote-unquote random wire, NFED random wire, and deploy it in an inverted L to see if I could get 20 meters and 10 meters stronger back east. And that will be good on 6 meters also, so I could start playing around with 6 meters. So those are my two reasons why I want to swap out the antennas, and just got to get done before it gets hot. Back to you, Roy. Roy, were you able to copy me there? Over.
Yes, I was able to copy you. Do you hear me out there, Joe?
I hear you. So I don't know if I missed something or not, but it is, my EchoLink is very temperamental. If I open up a calendar, I lose it. And what I did was I knocked my mouse off the KC2RC highlighted part. And if I do that, it disconnects me also. So it's a little bit weird, but I learned to make it work for me. So that's it. All right, Roy, thanks a lot for answering my question. And I'll be hanging out listening for the rest of the net. And to DEJ, standing by.
This is W1JEC. Am I on?
Yeah, you're on.
Okay, thank you. I'll be a son of a gun. Well, that wasn't fun. All right, let me clear on. My name is Jose. I'm a recent technician license. I live in an apartment in Brooklyn. I'm facing New Jersey. I've been just searching around. I found out that there's not a heck of a lot of D-Star repeaters in the area, and I'm about to cancel a Kenwood D75A. Bottom line is, I got a bunch of questions on hardware and stuff. So where can I start?
You can start any place that you want. You sent me the letter. I'm the guy who gave you the response and told you about this option to ask questions.
Life is good. Okay. I'm about to place an order instead for a Yaesu FTM 500, and I had questions about the kind of antenna. I have about a foot and a half of a balcony facing west. I've got a Blue A2, one of these battery things that's got 12 volts, 10 amps that's coming out, but I assume I would need a power supply for it as well. And I'm also interested in maybe getting a secondary battery that I can do some traveling with. I don't drive, but I might go to a park and hang out for the afternoon, which brings me to maybe possibly another antenna too. So the bottom line is that I don't know if a mobile is advisable for a home. I've got a bunch of different ideas on that. So do you have any suggestions on something like the FTM 500 or maybe another idea of something I could use in an apartment? I'm hoping I didn't lose my audio again.
Okay, do you hear me?
Yes, I do now. Yes.
Okay, very good. If more than one person keys down either on the repeater or on the Echo Link, it knocks the other guy out, and sometimes it's easy to realize that happened, and sometimes it's very difficult. I was trying to say that using a mobile for UHF VHF is incredibly common. I'm using an FTM 400 right now to connect your Echo Link and mic transmissions to the repeater. So that's fine. Matter of fact, there are some pluses that I think I mentioned in the email. You can get something that's going to output a lot more than the 5 watts that a handy talkie is capable of. So by all means, an FTM 500 is a fine radio. It has a nice amount of power to it, and it's capable of fusion if you're interested to try the digital domain of fusion. Our club's fusion aspect is kind of mothballed for the time being, but hopefully it will be active in a month or so. We'll have to see. But so an FTM 500 is fine. You can get a 13.8 volt battery for portable operation. You can get lead acid. If you're willing to pay a little bit extra, I would advise you to look into lithium iron phosphate rechargeable battery. They cost more, but their feature set is reasonably better than lead acid. So consider that. You should get a more powerful power supply for your shack. You never know when you're going to need more power. As far as an antenna, probably for your environment, a magnetic mount mobile type of antenna that's kind of meant for a car for the most part, the idea being that you stick the whip heart against the chassis and the metal sticks to the magnet and the car acts as a counterpoise to the antenna. But in your case, you're not going to have a car to attach it to. You get yourself a big iron-based cookie sheet, and that'll give you a nice counterpoise for a simple quarter-wave magnetic mount mobile antenna. And you could use it elsewhere instead of the cookie sheet. When you're doing portable, you might just take a couple of pieces of wire and apply that to the ground connection of that antenna to operate as a counterpoise. But it's all doable.
Okay, as far as it goes, you mentioned that the Kings County is not doing too much with fusion right now. Is that something that that got turned off, or do you have a number of repeaters that would, put it this way, I'm not too well versed on the direction that I'm pointing west from the middle of Brooklyn. I'm not sure how that affects where Kings County might be able to receive my service, my radios and stuff. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, it's downtown Brooklyn, so I can't tell you exactly. Let's see. Let me see if I could remember. I have my antenna pointed towards east, and that gives me a decent signal onto the repeater. We operate FM analog right now. We're on the air as FM analog. We have a device that taps into a Wires X room. so that other people could link it outside of radio waves through the internet and other things. The repeater can operate digitally, so you can operate locally fusion, but you can't operate beyond the range of the repeater using fusion because the gateway to the Wires X room is temporarily mothballed. We had to move it from one member to another, so there's a little bump in the road. But almost no one kind of uses fusion digital except for nets on this repeater. And so chances are you could have a fusion radio, and it'll, you know, for the most part, most of the things that you receive from this repeater will be analog.
Just to finish the idea in my head, do you guys do anything like D-Star or DMR or any other kind of digital services?
No. It depends on how much of a budget you have. We have one repeater. There are other clubs with, you know, 15, 16 different repeaters. They end up paying something like $5,000 plus a year just to maintain these things. And if you have multiple repeaters, you can set up one for DMR and one for Fusion and one for D-Star. And in fact, they've done that. Although from what I've been listening, the only somewhat popular repeater for that club is DMR, and that doesn't amount to that many people. There's probably about 10 people who are kind of regulars for the DMR. A lot of people nowadays use something called a hotspot, because if you use a digital a repeater, one of the benefits is you can link it to another digital repeater, so via the internet you can talk across the world. But the problem is it's just a kind of one-to-one connection. So you make that connection, and if the other connection is busier than the local repeater is just getting reception and very little transmission. So it kind of uses up the ability of the local repeater. So people came up with a hotspot device that interfaces with, say, a handy talkie, but you could do it, work with a portable radio, and it requires an internet access, you know, the same way web browser and other things, and it connects it to a gateway onto the internet. So you could use a handy talkie to get to the little hotspot, which then gets to the internet, which then gets to the gateway and lets you talk across the world. And more people are using that these days than setting up internet links on local repeaters.
Gotcha. Okay. So bottom line is that that does not use the actual antenna on the HT, though. That just goes out via the internet connection, correct? So a 5-watt HT would work for, you know, long distance?
Well, yeah, it would work. You don't even need 5 watts. What you're doing is you're using the handy talkie as a way of injecting your signal into your local hotspot that's usually nothing more than, say, 10, 15 feet away from you. So to go from your handy talkie to a hotspot in your house, you don't need 5 watts. Matter of fact, I set my handy talkie at its lowest settings, and then instead of using a large handy talkie whip, you know, I'm sure you've seen a variety of different HT antennas. Some of them are a foot long, some of them are 3 feet long. I usually use a real stubby little 2-inch rubberized antenna because, again, I'm just trying to make contact with a hotspot that's in the next room. So, yeah, you require very, very, very little power for your radio to be that part of a hotspot connection.
And one would be able to see to analog radios through that internet connection as well, or am I stuck to strictly digital?
It sort of depends. What it gives you access to is a variety of what are called digital gateways. Now, people on the other end can connect those digital gateways to almost anything that they're so inclined. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't work. Usually, they're connected to other digital gateways. So usually a D-Star radio communicates with D-Star type digital gateways, occasionally Fusion. D-Star is very difficult to kind of cross over the technologies because it uses a different translation chip. So there are sophisticated hotspots that can do it, but simple hotspots can only use a D-Star for a D-Star type of bridges, and Fusion and DMR can cross over, if that makes sense.
Okay, so I'm back on to looking for something that's not D-Star. What about, you know, one of the things on my mind is, not for nothing, not to be negative, but, you know, there's a lot of talk about the poop hitting the propeller and us going down without internet and without this, that, and the other. So if I were to do any kind of a digital service, I'd be basically incommunicado if there is any kind of power problems or something. I guess the last thing I want to ask you is this. I've got a sister about 15 miles away in Brooklyn, about 10 miles away. And I was thinking of doing some GMRS communication with her. She doesn't have a ham license and is not going to get one. Would your services include GMRS repeaters?
No. Unfortunately, they're a completely different spectrum. There are different radio bands. There's a bunch that are given to amateur radio operators and requires a license, and the FCC kind of sets the rules. There is a citizens band, the old 11-meter band that's still alive and active to a degree. And then there's the GMRS that you mentioned, but they're kind of boarded off. There's no proper gateway because I think the FCC would not look kindly. They require different licensing. Your sister wouldn't have to take a technical exam, but I think she has to fill out some form and pay some payment to be registered. I think it's a family license. But it's not particularly legal with the FCC to build connections between things like citizens band or GMRS and amateur radio bands.
Okay, no, I get the idea. It would have to be a separate device. I do understand also that I got a license for GMRS recently, and it should include immediate family, which I assume means that my sister could use my license. But I was just wondering, because I understood there are somewhere out there, I'm just starting out, but there are GMRS repeaters also, unless I'm like totally just missing the picture here.
No, not at all. There are GMRS repeaters that are designed for people with GMRS radios. And I'm sure there are some in New York City area. I don't stay familiar with them. I don't have that type of a license, and you know, I just stick on the ham bands. But yeah, they do generally have repeaters. It's they have different range a little bit, but and they're not, I don't think they're linked through the internet. I could be wrong, but yeah, there are certainly repeaters available for people who operate GMRS radios.
Okay, is there a brick-and-mortar ham radio store in New York? I've been trying to find a place where I could walk in and touch some stuff. I haven't been too successful. Do you know of any locations?
No, unfortunately, as far as I'm aware, there aren't such places. There's one place, I forget its name even, in Manhattan that doesn't really do anything, as far as I'm aware, for amateur radio. They're more into commercial communications equipment, you know, Motorola business frequencies and such. So that wouldn't be what you were looking for. There used to be a store in New Jersey that sold amateur radio equipment. The gentleman has got flooded, and he sold some stuff out of his garage for a while. I don't know. He might still be doing something, but it certainly isn't a retail store type of situation anymore. The problem is that there are very few brick-and-mortar amateur radio stores. The closest one that I can think of is Ham Radio Outlet, has a branch in Delaware, which is drivable, but it's a long drive. But there's nothing in the metropolitan area that I'm aware of. I understand that I agree with you. It would be nice to be able to walk into a retail store and to play with knobs and dials and keyboards and all kinds of fun stuff. But that's few and far between. There's probably, I would say, if I had to guess, 15 or 16 amateur radio retail store outlets in the United States, and they're spread far apart.
Okay, first of all, thank you for taking the time to talk to me. It was a heck of a time trying to get to you guys. So just to recap, is it fair to say that Yaesu would be the way to go in general for my situation? I'm not going to quote you on this, but would there be another brand that of a mobile that I could have at home that maybe, I mean, you're not doing Fusion right now. I don't know what the percentages of Fusion to DMR to this, that, or the other. Anytone has come up in my searches. Anyway, are there any other base stations that might have more of a population of repeaters out there that you know of?
Well, if it's just a matter of raw repeaters, so what we're really dealing with the question of is, you know, most of these radios will do FM analog. So in addition to FM analog, some of them do some flavor of digital voice. And as you mentioned, Anytone is capable of doing DMR. And there are a few DMR repeaters locally. I don't see them doing a lot of communicating. I mean, there are some repeaters a little bit better than others. A lot of them have kind of, the last time I checked, had opened up a channel to a very active talk group. And so I have a pan adapter, so I can see the waveform of transmissions. And I could go on UHF band, and I could see three or four repeaters simultaneously sending the exact same signal out, because all of them are linked to some very large talk group. And so they're practically acting as broadcasters instead of exchanging communications. So ultimately, if you were looking for the largest number of capable repeaters, DMR would give you more than Fusion, which would probably give you more than D-Star.
Okay, I lost track. I believe I'm speaking to Roy. I just want to say thank you. I will do some digging around. I'm going to take the liberty of maybe coming back in a couple of weeks when you guys do your next TechNet. But I really appreciate you taking the time to be out there for people like me who don't know what the heck we're talking about. So thank you so much. And I haven't heard anything again, so I assume I'm disconnected.
No, you're not disconnected. At least I hope you're not disconnected. Again, it was a situation that something with the repeater burped and didn't let me make a connection. I thank you for your kind words. We try and help people. We got help ourselves once upon a time, so we're passing it on. And we're here on the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month at 9 p.m., and you're welcome to join us for any of those. If you have any future questions, feel free, drop by and share them with us.
Okay, one final thanks to you. Thanks to Bob. And I'm just going to stick around in case there's any other conversation. Thank you.
Again, you're welcome. Glad to meet you. Unfortunately, your email didn't mention your call sign, so I didn't recognize you when you popped up on the Echo link. But I'm glad you took my advice, and I wish you luck. Once again, I am AC2GS. This is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. If anyone has any questions or topics of interest, please hit that push to talk and say hello.
K2MEV, I have a quick question about what's going on right now with my reception of this net.
Okay, Bob, you're very, very noisy. I think your power level went down, or I hope nothing happened to your antenna.
Do you hear me well now, or is it the same?
It's the same.
I don't know, maybe it's the same thing. Well, let me just move my antenna and see if it matters. For now?
Maybe it's a touch better, but it's really, you went from maybe 5, 10% noise in your background to something like 50 to 70.
No, the other thing is that while listening to you guys talk, the last QSO, the last station, and you, both of you, when you're signals, when you stop talking, I got the big ker-chunk. And it's not my microphone being plugged into my radio because I unplugged it. So I hope my radio itself can't do that kind of stuff. Are you, you're not hearing the ker-chunking all the time, are you?
I'm not hearing it all the time, but I hear it a lot with the repeater. It wasn't when you were having the problem, it was not a big ker-chunk. It was a bunch of big ker-chunks. So I've noticed the repeater acts kind of strange sometimes. If the person's volume level doesn't remain high, it will put a squelch, crash in their transmission. Sometimes it's there, sometimes it isn't. So it's difficult to figure out what might be happening. It might be a good time eventually to kind of check out the repeater and make sure everything is operating the way it's supposed to.
Okay, because it was not doing it earlier on this net. Also, hopefully you hear me a little better now, because I was just sitting at half power. I've been using half power for a long time, I guess. I just went to full power, which I guess is 50 watts on 2 meters with this radio, with my 7100. Do you hear me better, okay now?
Yes, it is immensely better.
Okay, I wonder why my signal was good and then suddenly it was bad before. Why I need more power than I did before. Maybe it has something to do with the repeater, I don't know.
It probably had something to do with propagation. It's a little on the rainy side. And water can reflect UHV VHF and UHF signals a bit. So maybe it's the rain.
Good point. That's a good possibility.
Yep, but you're sounding good right now.
Very good. Is William still around? He came in and I haven't heard from him in a while. I guess because you were talking to other people. Back to you.
Yeah, we have a rather packed Echo Link tonight. William, AC2ZV, Joe, N2DJ, Maxim is linked to KD2VEA, and of course, Hosey at W1JEC. So we got four people hanging out on Echo Link. Nice to see.
That's great. Yeah. All right, so when William came in on Echo Link, I always thought Echo Link sounded more faint, maybe just because of your settings, because it sounded like he was talking on his radio with a good connection on the antenna. So I guess when it comes through good, you can't tell the difference on my end, because it's really coming from you to the repeater or something like that.
Well, it's somewhat difficult to say. Sometimes William will link into Echo Link, but he'll transmit on the radio. So if I don't keep my eye on the window, I don't know whether he's talking through Echo Link or he's talking through the radio. So it's very possible that William's earlier transmissions at one time or another were through his radio to our repeater rather than the Echo Link. William, if you still hear me because you linked on Echo Link, have you been transmitting through a radio or through the Echo Link application? Oh, well, nothing much heard. Sometimes William will link a cell phone or something through Echo Link and then, be busy doing something else and doesn't respond, although he shows up on the Echo Link window.
Hey, Roy. The situation is I have a hard time getting in sometimes on Echo Link.
Why? Because we're quick keying and locking out the Echo Link? Or is it another problem?
Yeah, I think it's the click key thing.
Okay, we'll try not to do that. I try every so often when I'm trying to contact you to give a nice long pause, so it shouldn't be a problem. But when I'm talking to someone else, unfortunately, the back and forth tends to be quick keying too much. It's a common thing, unfortunately. It happens every Sunday on the Limark technical net as well. When two people are at it, asking and answering questions about things, they don't really leave too long a pause.
Yeah, I was wondering if there was such a thing as a hailing frequency, but not really. It seems like the text is the only way to do that.
Yeah, that's pretty much the only way to do that. When I was kind of a co-pilot on the Limark technical net, I would have a window open. And sometimes, if you have one person on EchoLink already, it's not very useful. But if you don't have anyone on EchoLink and someone is, you know, transmitting through a radio with EchoLink linked to it, you can see that little arrow when someone's trying to connect and not getting anywhere. And so what I would use to do is keep looking at the window. Text is always a good thing because I have the text window open all the time. So if people are having problems getting through, the text window gets through no matter what. And I would kind of step in and on the technical net and tell the K2RIW that someone's trying to reach the net, and he'd stop quick keying, and the other guy would stop quick keying, and we'd get somewhere. But that's the only thing that's available, unfortunately. It would be nice for hailing frequencies. That would require another channel and twice the complications, though. So I doubt if many repeater control operators would look forward to twice the work.
I'm wondering if maybe on the 10-meter net, if I was just a megahertz away, you would see me on your Panadapter.
Well, in principle, I probably would. Would I recognize it as you? No. I could tell the difference between FM signals and single sideband. I can tell the difference between upper sideband and lower sideband. It generates a waveform. I could recognize when multiple stations, as I mentioned earlier, occasionally a bunch of DMR repeaters transmitting the same thing. But as far as individual signals, I could look and see a frequency distribution and say, ah, that's William's frequency distribution. I'm afraid that I'm not capable of that.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe using a Morse code with the push-to-talk button, so that would send the carrier up in Morse code, and you'd be able to see it on the Panadapter. I'd go, dit 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 da dit da 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 da, like that.
Well, theoretically, yes, you could do that. That's a lot of effort, and you wouldn't be on EchoLink under those circumstances. And, you know, it's probably just easier to just kind of wait for a quiet moment on the frequency that we're working, you know, 28.380, and holler a bunch of times. And if I can't hear you, hopefully there's a relay station between you and I that can hear you, and they can help relay your transmission. So that really wouldn't help for EchoLink. And, you know, not everyone has Panadapters. It's getting more and more popular. But a lot of people still use the old-fashioned methods.
Well, it's sort of a crapshoot to see whether or not I'll get through, because sometimes I'll push the transmit thing and the microphone will come on, but it won't really transmit. I think it's working now pretty much.
Yeah, unfortunately, EchoLink is kind of fidgety. If it receives anything, if the repeater burps, if the squelch crash kind of echoes, if there's even noise in the audio stream of the program, it will deselect. That's kind of what's been happening about 3-4 times, that I'll push on the push to talk, I'll check the lightning bolt icon on EchoLink, and I'll just go on a paragraph, and then when I look back at the EchoLink, the lightning bolt is deselected. So something inside of the application kind of confused it and stopped the transmission. And so people on the other side then respond, "Are you out there? Did you hear me?" type of thing. So it's not a perfect means of communication, but for the price, it's pretty good.
Well, my question is, did you already do the puzzle?
No, we did not do the puzzle yet. If you would like, we can do the puzzle right now.
Yeah, okay. It takes me about like 10 or 15 seconds to respond because of the way everything is slow. But sure, let's do it.
Okay. Tonight's TechNet Puzzle is available on our website. You can find the link on the first page, or you can just type in to your browser puzzle.kc2rc.com. And the question is, the purpose of digitizing an analog signal such as that from a microphone is to, and then they give you four choices. Choice A is to limit the frequency response to between 300 hertz and 3000 hertz. Choice B is to identify the person who is speaking to comply with the license. Choice C is to keep the ratio between the signal and the background noise as low as possible. And choice D is to allow the signal to be processed with suitable software. So would anyone like to hazard a guess or know for sure what the answer to tonight's TechNet puzzle is?
MVB, I think I have a pretty good guess on this one.
Sure, Bob. What would your guess be?
It's choice A. I think they think sometimes call it just compression, you know, compressing the audio. So I guess it squeezes the hose and gets it out better, if that's the reason. It gets it out a little better.
Okay, let me give you a little bit of a hint. You can do that, and it has been done for the last 70 years with analog filters. You make a bandpass filter, and it cuts off at around below 300 hertz, and it also cuts out above below 300 hertz, and it cuts off above 3000 hertz. So it's just you could use an analog bandpass filter. So it's not A. Care to guess again?
Yeah, I do have a second guess, which I, before I guessed, said A, I had a second choice. It would be C, keep the ratio between the signal and background noise as low as possible.
Okay, it doesn't really do it by itself, so it's not really the best answer. It's sort of a part of the answer, but it's not the complete answer, because digitizing the signal is not inherently going to change the signal-to-noise ratio. You have to then do something with the digitized signal to accomplish that feat. So it's not C.
You know something? Maybe I misunderstood the question. I didn't think this was exact. Is this like making it into like DMR or D-Star or Fusion? I didn't think it was. I was doing something just because it said microphone. But if it is, it could be all that other kind of stuff, like identifying the person who's speaking. But maybe it's not. So the only thing left, what you're saying with your hint, it must be D. Line is going to be processed with suitable software. So maybe C is just some of what it can do with the software, and it can do other things as well.
Well, let's ask, because William mentioned the TechNet puzzle. I don't want to completely finish it without him. Do you have anything to say, William?
Yeah, hey, I couldn't get in there. Yeah, I think it's D, because I think that's the answer.
Yes, you are absolutely right. This applies to single sideband, could apply to FM. But, I mean, primarily, what this really is talking about is digital signal processing, which has been around long before digital voice transmission modes. It's been around before civilian software-defined radios. Digital signal processing is sophisticated algorithms that manipulate digitized audio to remove some of the noise. It's not perfect, and probably will end up needing the sophisticated technology of artificial intelligence to do a better job. But in this case, you use digital signal processors. But before you can use your digital signal processor, obviously you have to insert a digital signal into it. And the way to do that is to use a digitizer that changes the analog signal from analog to digital. So that's the proper answer, is D. It allows the signal to be processed with suitable software. So again, it's not the digitizing itself that changes the signal-to-noise ratio. It's the suitable software that ultimately does the job. So you get a gold star, William?
Yeah, Roy, I'm just wondering if they've got AI software that can eliminate static and then repeat the text back without any...
As far as I'm aware, not yet, but eventually it will, because the problem is most noise is random. You cannot filter randomness. So the aspects of noise that are not quite random are the part that digital sound processing can accomplish. What ultimately you would need to do is you would need to have an incredibly powerful artificial intelligence system that would be able to reestablish the voice that was filled with noise. It would have to be incredibly clever and know how conversations on ham bands tend to sound like, and then supply a completely false voice without any of the noise. You know, sometimes it might work, and sometimes it might insert random content that had nothing to do with what the guy told you or was trying to tell you. You can sort of see the same type of thing. There are artificial intelligent programs that improve the resolution of an image by interpolating the blurry parts and making assumptions of how the blurry parts used to look. And if they get it right, it's wonderful. But occasionally there are demonstrations where they get it terribly wrong and they're giving you a non-existent image. You know, it wasn't the original image made less blurry. It was an image that the software imagined for sundry reasons of the way it was trained. So it will have something like that eventually, but the computer power required for something like that would not fit into anyone's radio at this time. So, you know, I mean, I guess at first it might run on in the clouds, but even that is kind of computationally intensive.
I just wanted to jump back in there again, Jose. I came across some stuff called JSA. I think it's a it's like an FTA kind of protocol where they can actually do keyboard-to-keyboard transmissions for like texting and such or email or something, and it also allows them to do it with very, very low power amounts. That might have something to do with that digitizing business.
Well, Jose, I the way that we've been discussing it, we've been kind of talking about voice, and this is text-based, but it's purely a digital mode. There's no analog to digital going on other than in the computer. JS8 call is simply FT8. The thing that some people had a problem with FT8, FT8 is designed specifically to make very short contacts and establish very simple information to exchange call signs and signal strength and quality and such so that you can file for a worked all states card and you can stick it on your wall. Occasionally, people operating FT8 found it kind of sterile. They liked to kind of interact with other human beings, and there was no real variable text field. So someone took the source code of FT8, put in a variable text field, and you're now able to send very, very, very slowly text messages. Because of the nature of FT8, which is the same as JS8, the symbol rate, the amount of information you can send per second, is very slow. So if you were telling someone how you spent an afternoon, you could very likely, it would take you probably 20 minutes to have that bit of text that you typed in being sent in small little packets to the other guy. The benefit is, you know, you don't have to worry too much about a strong signal. You don't need a linear amplifier, although people use linear amplifiers for FT8, and you don't need high-gain antennas. FT8 is very popular. Every time I go past it, it is busy like a bee. So it has great features in that you can communicate below the noise floor, but it's very slow. Okie doke, Jose responded in text saying cool. So, yeah, I think it's cool, too. Joe Taylor, brilliant man, Nobel Prize winner in astrophysics, was one half of the FT8 algorithm. That's the T in the FT8 is for Taylor. The F is for Frank, which is the last name of the other guy who worked on the algorithm with Joe Taylor. So it's FT8 is real cool. And JS call is also a nice adaptation of the technology. Anyway, once again, I continue to be AC2GS. We keep this going until people run out of things to say to each other. So, if there's any other questions or comments, please let me know. Okay, we'll give it one last try. If there's anyone with any more questions or comments before we close this episode of the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net, hit that push to talk.
Hey Roy, this is Max, KB2VA. Just wanted to say hi and let you know that I did create a Discord channel we talked about. I gotta send you the link.
Okay, very good. I included that in the minutes. I just sent that out tonight. And, yeah, please do. I wasn't aware. I've seen some guys on YouTube that kind of use it as their own private virtual Zoom meeting place. So that's interesting. I know it's capable of doing video and audio and other such, but I wasn't sure that you could kind of do, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 people simultaneously like a Zoom meeting, unless that's the more expensive model. I don't know.
Yeah, I saw that they're now, you always used to have audio, but I saw that there's like a Sage, you know, do a Sage now, which allows video. So actually, the way I set it up, it's also a community, not just like a regular, version of it, it's a community version of it, which we'll see what kind of that allows to do. Well, we could play around with it, see what's possible. Like, but I think for now, you know, we say, but hey, you got to get Discord in order to get on these meetings. Yeah, people barely got using Zoom so far.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to tempt fate, at least at the beginning. You know, we got to kind of figure it out for ourselves and then reassess as time goes on. But yeah, please send me the information necessary, and I'll add it to my growing list of Discord servers on my software.
Yeah, we'll try it out. Yeah, those could be interesting for sure.
I'm still willing to bet that there's going to be a strict demographic binary operating, except maybe for me and some random older guy who's into IT and such. But we'll see.
Hey, Roy, I am not taking the other side of that bet because, you know, you're right. but to be honest, that's exactly the purpose, to get them of the folks, the younger folks who are complaining to me that I have a better way of communicating, to organize things, to go, you know, to the parks and do the stuff. That's what they want. Maybe that's what we'll give them and see if we can get anybody else. But I bet William will get on Discord and use it. Oh, well, you're probably right. Yeah,
yeah, I kind of look at it as the inverse of Facebook.
Why inverse of Facebook? That's an interesting way of putting it.
Because Facebook has the exact opposite demographics. As far as I'm aware, the majority of people who hang out on Facebook is middle-aged and older people. I don't think young people have mostly looked at Facebook for the last 10 years. So that's why I would think of it as sort of the demographic inverse of Discord.
Yeah, you're not wrong there, to be honest. From talking to some of the people that work with me who are in their 20s, yeah, Facebook is not something they use. They're on a lot of things.
Yeah, it's become a major annoyance of me. I don't use it, but I know people who do, and they have the squirreliest conspiracies imaginable that I'm betting are straight from these Facebook news feeds. Social software can be very harmful under some circumstances.
Yeah, no doubt about that. It's getting harder for people to know what's true or not. You know, things are getting weird as it is. Nonetheless, looking forward to our conversation. Well, actually, I guess the meeting is not until maybe, but yeah, looking forward to that. Maybe I'll get to play with my antennas this weekend, see if I can get them working a little bit better. It's getting warmer, so I'm going to try to get outside and get on your net one of these days, which during the, you know, the morning.
Great. I look forward to it as well. Last Sunday was pleasant in that I didn't really contact that many DX stations, unfortunately, but the local stations stayed a while to chat. Usually they kind of come by and say hello and then say goodbye. So, you know, it's good for about 3, 4, or 5 minutes. But this past Sunday, people didn't have anything scheduled, I guess. So they sat down and chatted for a while. So it was nice.
That's awesome. and I've been kind of encouraging people to start joining me on the internet as well. One of the ideas that I had with those younger guys as well, we're going to meet up on the weekend to do some of the parks out. We do some Bogota, if we go to those kind of parks, but if we're going to regular parks, even just getting onto your net from a park, as long as we do it at the right time, could be kind of a fun thing to do, because they'll give us something, a target, a reason for timing in the days. Nonetheless, I'm dying to, well, so I am going to sign off. Roy, it was always good to hear you, and we will talk soon. 73.
Okay, very good, Maxim. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Joe left us a little while ago, and to DEJ, wrote, gotta go, good net, 73 to all. So that's good. So thank you, Maxim. Thanks to everyone who checked in and participated tonight. Before we call it an end, I just want to make sure I don't leave anyone behind. Anyone else has any closing comments to make? This is probably going to be the best time to make them.
I had one last question. I've got a Blue Yeti. It's like a solar generator. It puts out 12 volts at 10 amps. I'm assuming that wouldn't be enough to run a mobile radio. Is that about right?
It sort of depends upon the specifications of the mobile. If it's a 50 watt, probably not, because 10 amps at 12 volts should hopefully be 120 watts. Most radios, maybe as far as transmission is concerned, are about 40-50% efficient. So you'd be kind of just at the edge. So, but you could set it for lower power settings as long as you don't try and max it out. You might be able to get away with it, something you can try. As long as it has a battery in it to kind of maintain the power, because, you know, if a cloud kind of passes, all of a sudden your power is going to drop, which is not a good thing.
Yeah, it's got like a LiFePO battery in there. It's like 700. You know what? I'll pick this up some other time next week. I just wanted to say thank you one more time. 73, stay strong.
Thank you very much, Jose. I appreciate your participation, and I look forward to your future questions, and I'm sure you're going to find that this hobby is a great one. It has a great deal of depth and breadth. If you don't like one thing, there's 50, 60 other things. And if you like something, there's no limitation of how deep you can dive into it. So I wish you good luck in the hobby. I've enjoyed it, and I'm sure you will. Okay, with that, Jose left the Echo Link. And again, thanks to everyone. This net has been brought to you by the Kings County Radio Club. Our club is an ARRL-affiliated club based in Brooklyn, New York. We meet on the first Wednesday of each and every month. Our next meeting will be March 6th, which will be held by teleconference. Club members will be emailed with the details of logging into the meeting. Non-members wishing to join a general meeting can email me, AC2GS, with some form of identification for the required link. Although our meetings informally begin after 7 p.m., our formal regular general meeting starts at 8 p.m. and continues until anywhere from 9 to 10 o'clock, depending upon the number of points that need to be covered. We have a weekly 2-meter club net every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. on this repeater, and this technical net meets on the second and fourth Wednesdays of each month at 9 p.m. We also sponsor a 10-meter net every Sunday morning at 11 a.m., usually on 28.380. Sometimes we go a little bit high or a little bit low, depending upon the environment there. We offer an audio stream of our KC2RC repeater on the internet, as well as our 10-meter net. Just type into your browser stream.kc2rc.com, and you will hear either, depending upon the time of day that you're listening. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although, once again, we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club, and as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. If you would like to contact the hosts of this technical net, simply address your email to tech@kc2rc.com. We maintain an active website at www.kingscountyradioclub.com or www.kc2rc.com, which offers archives of this technical net, amateur radio news, original articles, and technical forums. Please visit our website and participate. Our web hosting services are generously donated by the local Brooklyn-based web hosting company, Three Aliens Web Hosting, who we would like to thank. As the great philosopher Jimi Hendrix once said, "Knowledge speaks, but wisdom listens." So try to listen a bit more and talk a lot less. It's time to roll this all up and shut it all down, but we'll be back to do it again March 13th, and you're all welcome to join us. Thanks to all the people that participated tonight, especially my co-host, Bob, KD2NVB. Without you guys, I'd just be talking to myself. So, this is Roy, AC2GS, going clear and getting the heck out of here. Stay safe, be well. We'll talk to you down the line. AC2GS clear.